At 1:01 p.m., November 17, 2021, a call came in from Airways Boulevard. A man had been shot inside Makeda's Homemade Butter Cookies, a small bakery loved across Memphis. The caller could barely speak. She said a customer walked in minutes earlier, and now the glass door was shattered and people were running. Officers were dispatched immediately. When they arrived, the scene was frozen in shock. Yellow tape went up as crowds pressed toward the bakery's front windows. Phones were raised. People kept asking the same question. Was that Young Dolph, the 36-year-old rapper, known for speaking openly about loyalty, struggle, and surviving Memphis streets, was lying inside? Witnesses said two masked men jumped out of a white Mercedes, raised their weapons, and fired through the storefront. It lasted seconds. The attackers left just as quickly, disappearing down a side street and vanishing before anyone could understand what happened. The city felt the blast of silence that followed, and the question began, who planned this daylight ambush and why here? Chapter 1, The Day at the Bakery. The morning of November 17, 2021, started like many others in South Memphis. The air had a mild chill, and traffic on Airways Boulevard moved steadily as people made their way through the early afternoon. Makeda's Homemade Butter Cookies sat on the strip with its familiar yellow sign, a small storefront that had become one of the neighborhood's most loved shops. People walked in for cookies, talked with staff, and stepped back out with boxes wrapped in white paper. It was a routine scene, quiet and ordinary. Shortly before 1 p.m., Young Dolph arrived at the bakery. He had been in and out of the shop many times over the years. He often stopped to buy cookies for family members or to show support for the small business. The staff knew him. Customers knew him. His presence did not create a crowd. It felt normal. He parked his car outside, walked through the front door, and greeted the workers. Witnesses said he looked relaxed. He spoke briefly with staff and waited for his order. Inside, the atmosphere was calm. A handful of customers browsed the counter. A worker prepared a box of cookies. Nothing suggested the next moments would shift the entire city. The glass on the front door reflected sunlight from the street. Outside, cars passed at a slow pace. The day did not stand out from any other weekday afternoon. At 1:01 p.m., the shift began. A white two-door Mercedes pulled into the parking lot. Witnesses later described the vehicle moving with purpose. It approached the storefront, paused for a brief moment, then came to a stop. Two men stepped out. They wore masks and carried firearms. Their movements were fast and coordinated. They walked toward the bakery without saying a word. Inside, customers heard the first impact as the glass door fractured. It sounded sharp, sudden, and unmistakable. Then more cracks followed in rapid succession. The sound echoed inside the small shop. People froze, some ducked. Others moved instinctively toward the counter or the back of the store. Employees tried to take cover. The whole event lasted seconds. The men outside fired through the front windows, then turned back toward the waiting vehicle. They got inside and pulled away. Witnesses saw the Mercedes speed north along Airways Boulevard. Some tried to remember the license plate. Others were too shaken to process anything beyond the shock of what they had seen. Inside the bakery, panic spread. Customers called emergency services. One employee shouted for help. Another tried to direct people away from the windows. The floor was covered with shattered glass. The room fell into a stunned silence that lasted until police sirens broke through the noise of the street. The first 911 call reached dispatch at 1:01 p.m. The caller spoke frantically. She said a man had been shot at Makeda's. She did not know the extent of the injuries. She said she recognized the victim, but did not want to say the name over the phone. She repeated the address. The dispatcher assured her that help was on the way and told her to stay on the line if she could. Patrol units were nearby. Within minutes, squad cars arrived. Officers stepped out and saw the crowd forming around the entrance. People approached from both sides of the street. Some tried to get closer. Others stayed back, shaken. Officers ordered everyone to step away from the storefront. They secured the area and moved toward the entrance with caution. Inside, they assessed the scene. They cleared the room to ensure the shooters were not still present. They instructed customers and staff to remain where they were until paramedics arrived. Officers began separating witnesses, taking quick notes before the memories blurred. Some witnesses were crying, others stood silent. One staff member kept repeating that she could not believe what had happened. Outside, the street grew crowded. People recognized the car parked in front of the bakery. They recognized the possibility of what had occurred. Word spread quickly. Phones came out. Social media posts began circulating. Officers tried to control the crowd as they expanded the perimeter. More units were called in. Soon, the entire block was lined with tape. Paramedics entered the bakery. They began their assessment. The scene was tense and heavy. No one raised their voice. No one tried to push forward. The realization of the moment settled over everyone. Officers communicated updates quietly. The sergeant on scene contacted higher command. Detectives were notified and instructed to respond immediately. By 1:20 p.m., detectives arrived and took control of the investigation. Their first priority was documenting the scene before anything was moved. They photographed the shattered glass, the bullet impacts, and the layout of the shop. They observed the positions of customers and employees. They collected shell casings from outside the entrance. Each casing was documented and placed in evidence bags. The bakery owners were contacted. They arrived shortly after and stood behind the tape, visibly distraught. Officers spoke with them briefly and assured them the area would remain secured. The owners provided key information about the shop layout, camera placements, and the working order of the security system. Detectives later confirmed that the cameras captured part of the incident. Police then canvassed the immediate businesses along Airways Boulevard. They asked whether anyone saw the white Mercedes before the shots. Some workers said they saw the vehicle drive past earlier. Others said they noticed it only when it sped away. One business had a camera facing the street. Detectives reviewed the footage and saw the vehicle moving north right after the shooting. The video was transferred to evidence. Next, detectives interviewed the witnesses inside the bakery. The accounts were emotional and fragmented. Some described hearing the impacts, but never saw the shooters. Others saw the silhouettes of the men through the glass. One customer remembered seeing the vehicle pull in. Another remembered the speed at which the men moved. A worker said she recognized the man who had been shot and said he walked in calm and friendly. She said she had no idea why anyone would target him. Detectives documented each statement separately. No one had seen the shooters clearly enough to provide detailed descriptions. Masks and the speed of the attack made identification difficult. Still, the consistent description of the white two-door Mercedes gave investigators a starting point. The vehicle became the first major lead. Officers expanded the tape farther down the block. They moved crowd control farther away to prevent interference with the evidence. The scene continued to draw people from the surrounding neighborhoods. Many had strong reactions. Some cried openly. Others tried to call friends or family members. Many stood in disbelief. The identity of the victim spread by word of mouth. It fueled the shock on the street. Detectives continued gathering footage from nearby businesses, gas stations, and residences with security cameras. They asked for recordings between 12:45 p.m. and 1:15 p.m. They knew the attackers approached and fled in a narrow window. Every angle mattered. They retrieved footage showing the Mercedes passing earlier that day, though not close enough for identification. Back inside the bakery, technicians analyzed the bullet impacts. They traced angles and measured distances. This helped reconstruct the shooter's positions outside the entrance. The shattered glass showed that the shots came in from the parking lot side. The precision and speed suggested coordination. Detectives noted this detail. It indicated planning rather than a spontaneous act. Outside, officers examined the ground near the bakery. They found tire marks consistent with a vehicle accelerating out of the lot. They photographed the marks and compared them to similar patterns captured on local intersections. Though the marks themselves did not identify the vehicle, they helped confirm the sequence of movement. Detectives then began reconstructing the timeline. Young Dolph arrived at the bakery shortly before 1 p.m. The shooters arrived moments later. The attack lasted seconds. The escape was immediate. The response from police occurred within minutes. The timeline highlighted the precision of the operation. Throughout the afternoon, more crowds arrived. Some fans stood quietly, hands in pockets, heads lowered. Others prayed. A few spoke to detectives and offered anything they remembered, even if small. Many expressed disbelief that such an attack happened in broad daylight in a public place. The sense of loss extended beyond the block. City officials were notified early. The mayor's office released a public statement acknowledging the incident and urging people to remain calm. Police leadership assured the public that the investigation was underway with full resources. Officers increased presence around the bakery and along key corridors of the city. Detectives then moved to gather information on the victim's activities leading up to the shooting. They verified that young Dolph had been in Memphis for events and business. They confirmed his known schedule that morning. They noted that the bakery stop was part of his normal routine when he was in the city. There was no sign he was followed inside the shop. There was no confrontation inside. Everything pointed to an attack from outside. As the afternoon turned to evening, the block remained active. Officers continued interviewing witnesses. Detectives reviewed additional footage, much of it showing the same sequence. The white Mercedes entering the lot, the men stepping out, the rapid movement toward the bakery, and the vehicle fleeing. None of the footage captured clear faces, but the vehicle, the clothing, and the timing were consistent across all videos. Detectives held a briefing on site. They outlined the next steps. They would trace the route of the Mercedes. They would analyze the casings and compare them to any prior incidents. They would review young Dolph's recent engagements to determine whether any known conflicts might have relevance. They would speak with the security teams associated with the victim, and they would widen the search beyond the immediate area. The owners of Makeda's remained devastated. They provided access to all internal cameras. The footage from inside the bakery showed customers reacting, the shattering glass, and the immediate chaos. Detectives reviewed the footage frame by frame. It confirmed what witnesses said. The attackers never entered the store. They fired from outside and left quickly. As evening settled, the scene eventually cleared. Officers removed the outer tape, then cleared the interior once processing was complete. The bakery closed for the night. The windows were boarded. The sign remained lit, but the store stood quiet and empty. The detectives left with dozens of statements, hours of footage, multiple pieces of physical evidence, and one central unanswered question. Who were the men in the white Mercedes, and why did they choose this moment to carry out such a bold attack? The city around them remained shaken. The news spread to every corner of Memphis. Messages from fans, friends, and artists came in from across the country. People gathered outside the bakery long after officers left. Some brought candles, others brought posters and flowers. The block became a place of grief overnight. For detectives, the investigation had just begun. The next steps required deeper examination of the footage, identification of the vehicle, and understanding the movements before and after the shooting. The timeline was tight, the operation was deliberate, and the motive remained unclear. But one thing was certain. The daylight killing of young Dolph was not random. Someone planned it, someone executed it, and someone knew why. Those answers waited in the evidence still being collected. Chapter 2, The Search for Motive and Identity. Detectives returned to the Memphis Police Department's homicide office early on November 18, 2021. The previous day had been consumed by the processing of the bakery scene, the crowd control, and the preliminary interviews. Now the focus shifted from the event itself to the questions behind it. The killing of young Dolph had stunned the city. Detectives needed to understand who had done it, why it had taken place so quickly, and whether it had been planned days or weeks in advance. The first task of the morning was to reconstruct the victim's schedule. Detectives reviewed his movements in the hours before the shooting. They confirmed he had been in Memphis for business, for community events, and to spend time with family. They verified that his stop at Makeda's was routine. Workers at the bakery repeated that he visited often. Detectives spoke with people who saw him earlier in the day. They confirmed he was calm, relaxed, and moving without concern. No one sensed he was being followed. Next, detectives turned to the victim profile. Young Dolph was known throughout Memphis as a prominent figure in rap music. He built his career independently, without relying on major labels. This gave him a strong following and also placed him in the center of ongoing tensions in the local music scene. He had spoken publicly about surviving earlier attempts on his life, including a shooting in 2017. He had also spoken openly about keeping distance from conflicts. He described himself as focused on work, family, and building opportunities. These details helped detectives understand the broader context, but they also introduced complications. If the attacks stemmed from long-standing tensions, the list of possible motives expanded dramatically. If the attacks stemmed from personal disputes, the list remained narrow. Detectives needed to determine which direction to follow. They began with the most immediate lead, the white two-door Mercedes. Overnight, officers across the city received an alert with images captured from surveillance footage. The department asked officers to check for similar vehicles in parking lots, residential streets, and high-traffic areas. Detectives also requested that nearby cities be notified in case the vehicle left Memphis. Footage collected from businesses confirmed several points. One clip showed the Mercedes driving toward Airways Boulevard minutes before the shooting. Another showed it fleeing at high speed immediately afterward. In both clips, the license plate was covered or obscured. Still, the vehicle's shape, wheels, and trim details were clear. Detectives forwarded the footage to analysts who specialized in identifying vehicles from partial visuals. They compared wheel patterns, emblem placement, and body shape to narrow the vehicle's possible models and manufacturing years. While the vehicle analysis progressed, detectives continued to collect statements. They spoke with employees from the bakery again. They spoke with customers who had visited minutes before the shooting. Some had already left the scene when officers arrived. Others had not spoken on the first day due to shock. They repeated consistent details. The attack happened fast. The men wore masks. No one heard them speak. No one saw them hesitate. The coordination suggested planning. Detectives then turned to the broader community impact. News of the killing spread rapidly. Fans gathered outside Makeda's. Messages poured across the city. People expressed anger and disbelief. Many questioned why someone would target a man known for giving back to his community. Detectives understood that emotional responses could blur details. Still, they listened to the reactions. The scale of the grief underscored the stakes. One detail emerged from several community members. People mentioned seeing the same white Mercedes in certain areas of Memphis in earlier weeks. Some insisted it had been involved in unrelated disturbances. Others said they saw it near parking lots where arguments took place. These accounts were not confirmed, but detectives documented each sighting for later comparison. By the afternoon of November 18, detectives received a crucial update. The white Mercedes had been recovered. It was found abandoned near a neighborhood in the city. Officers secured the area, and detectives rushed to the location. The car was parked near an abandoned house. The doors were shut. There were no signs of people nearby. Crime scene technicians processed the vehicle. They photographed the interior and exterior. They checked for fingerprints, DNA, fibers, and any trace evidence. They found shell casings inside the car that matched the type used at the shooting. This strengthened the connection. Detectives also found gloves and clothing believed to have been used during the attack. These items were collected and sent for lab testing. While the vehicle was being processed, detectives worked on identifying individuals associated with the car. They checked registration records. The car was reported stolen weeks earlier. The owner said it was taken from a gas station lot. He said he had no knowledge of the individuals who took it. Detectives confirmed his statement. This did not reveal suspects, but it eliminated one avenue of confusion. The thieves used the vehicle for the attack, not the original owner. At headquarters, detectives gathered to review the timeline. The Mercedes was stolen weeks earlier. It was possibly used in other incidents. It approached Makeda's shortly before 1 p.m. The attackers moved quickly. They fled immediately after the shots. They abandoned the vehicle in another neighborhood. They then likely continued on foot or switched to another means of transportation. Detectives next reviewed all footage of the suspects themselves. The shooters were masked. Their clothing covered most identifying features. Still, detectives focused on height, build, gait, and movement patterns. One shooter appeared taller with a strong build. The second was shorter and moved with quicker steps. Both carried firearms in a controlled manner. Their coordination suggested they had practiced the movement. Analysts used footage from multiple angles to determine approximate heights. These estimates were not exact, but they provided a range. Detectives compared the ranges to individuals known in previous disturbances or conflicts related to the victim. They also examined social media posts circulating in the hours after the shooting. Though they could not rely on unverified claims, they monitored names and rumors to identify possible avenues of inquiry. The next step was gathering details from the ballistics lab. Analysts compared the casings from the bakery with casings found in the Mercedes. They matched. This confirmed that the same firearm or firearms were used in both locations. This connection added strength to the vehicle's role as a primary piece of evidence. Detectives then reviewed earlier incidents involving the victim. Young Dolph had been the target of prior attacks. In 2017, he survived a shooting in another city. That case had involved public disputes with other figures in the music industry. Detectives considered whether any of those older tensions resurfaced. They contacted investigators from the earlier case. They exchanged information about known individuals who had histories of conflict with the victim. This cross-referencing did not produce immediate suspects, but it provided background context. As detectives continued gathering evidence, they noticed a developing pattern. Many of the individuals identified in old disputes, rumors, and conflicts were connected to larger groups. Some had prior charges. Some had ties to neighborhoods with documented tensions. Detectives could not jump to conclusions based on association alone. Still, these observations helped them form a broader map of possible motivations. At the same time, they examined whether the killing might have been unrelated to public disputes. They reviewed whether personal matters, private conversations, or recent business decisions played a role. They cross-checked schedules and locations. They gathered information about who the victim met in the days before the shooting. Nothing stood out as directly connected. There were no signs of threats. There were no reports of confrontations. Everything looked ordinary in the victim's final days. Meanwhile, the recovery of the Mercedes led to another break. Inside the vehicle, technicians found a fingerprint on an interior handle. The print was partial but usable. Detectives matched it to a known individual with prior charges. The individual was Justin Johnson. He was 23 years old and had previous convictions. Detectives began examining his movements in the days before the shooting. They learned that Johnson had connections to certain groups in Memphis. He had spent time in areas where the Mercedes had been sighted. They found online posts where he presented himself in a manner that caught investigators' attention. Detectives did not immediately label him responsible. They noted him as a person of interest. Next, detectives examined Johnson's known associates. They identified another individual of interest, Cornelius Smith. He had prior interactions with law enforcement. Detectives learned he had been linked to the stolen Mercedes in earlier weeks. This connection made him significant to the investigation. Detectives added him to their watch list and began gathering more information about his movements. The public played a role as well. Within days of the shooting, community members called in tips. Some described seeing Johnson or Smith near the areas where the Mercedes was found. Others suggested they had observed unusual activity near certain houses. Detectives logged each tip carefully. They separated speculation from verifiable information. As the investigation expanded, detectives located additional footage from a nearby business. This footage captured the Mercedes hours before the shooting. It showed two individuals inside, though their faces were not visible. The footage captured height and movements similar to those seen during the attack. Detectives compared this clip to earlier clips. The similarities strengthened the case against the individuals associated with the Mercedes. Lab results continued to come in. Analysts examined fibers from the clothing found inside the vehicle. They matched them with fibers found near the bakery. This added another layer of confirmation. Detectives now had the vehicle, the casings, the fibers, and the timeline all pointing in the same direction. However, one question grew louder within the investigation. Were the attackers acting on their own, or were they following instructions from someone else? Detectives reviewed messages, phone records, and social media activity. They searched for any signs of coordination. Some data indicated that the individuals were in contact with others in the days before the attack. Certain conversations hinted at plans or movements. These indications remained unproven. Detectives carefully marked them as allegations, not facts. Community reaction continued to escalate. Vigils were held across Memphis. Crowds gathered in front of the bakery. Candles were lit. Artists posted tributes. City leaders spoke publicly about the need for peace and cooperation. Detectives noted that public pressure increased as the investigation gained traction. Every development drew attention. Every rumor circulated quickly. Despite the intensity, detectives remained focused on evidence. They knew that the next steps required careful coordination with the district attorney's office. They needed warrants. They needed more interviews. They needed clarity before moving forward with charges. They continued gathering data on Johnson and Smith. They tracked their movements, examined their known associates, and reviewed their ties to various neighborhoods. By late November, the investigation reached a critical point. Enough evidence had accumulated to support deeper action, but detectives needed one more connection to tie everything together. They reviewed digital records again. They extended their search to data collected from the neighborhoods linked to the suspects. They listened to witness accounts with new context. Clues that seemed small earlier now carried greater weight. The question that guided their work remained the same. Were Johnson and Smith the only ones involved, or was someone else responsible for organizing the attack? Detectives moved into the final stage of this chapter of the investigation, preparing for the possibility that another figure played a role behind the scenes. The pieces were aligning, but the final connections had not yet been made. The break in the case would come next. Chapter 3: The Break, the Charges, and the Aftermath. Detectives arrived at headquarters early on November 29, 2021. They had spent nearly 2 weeks compiling evidence, reviewing footage, and tracking the trail left by the white Mercedes. They had built a timeline that aligned the movements of the suspects with the movements of the vehicle. Now they needed a decisive break, something that would transform suspicion into legal grounds for charges. The first major breakthrough came from digital analysis. Investigators reviewed phone records linked to the individuals they had identified as persons of interest. They did not expect confessions or direct statements. Instead, they looked for patterns in communication, movement, and proximity to key locations. One record stood out. A phone associated with Justin Johnson was active near the bakery at the time of the shooting. This detail alone did not prove involvement, but it established presence in a location relevant to the case. Detectives combined this information with the fingerprint recovered inside the white Mercedes. The print was a partial match for Johnson. Lab analysts confirmed the result after multiple comparisons. The probability of the match was strong. This marked the first piece of evidence tying an individual physically to the getaway vehicle. Next came the connection to Cornelius Smith. The stolen Mercedes had been located in a neighborhood where Smith had known associations. Witnesses in that area provided accounts of unfamiliar individuals leaving the vehicle before officers arrived. Some described seeing two men running through the neighborhood. Their descriptions matched the general builds of Johnson and Smith. These accounts were not treated as proof. They were treated as corroborating details. Detectives collected additional footage from homes near the area where the Mercedes was dumped. One camera captured two individuals walking briskly toward a side street. Their faces were not visible, but their height, clothing, and gait resembled the suspects seen in footage from the bakery. Investigators compared the movements frame by frame. The similarities aligned. This gave detectives a continuous trail from the bakery to the location where the Mercedes was abandoned. At this point, detectives met with the district attorney's office. They presented the timeline, the fingerprint match, the vehicle evidence, the surveillance clips, and the witness accounts. Prosecutors agreed that the evidence supported further action. They worked with detectives to draft warrants for the arrest of Johnson and Smith. These warrants required careful wording and precise presentation of the evidence. Detectives wanted to ensure the case would withstand scrutiny in court. While the arrest warrants were being prepared, detectives continued investigating the possibility of a third person involved in planning the attack. Over the previous weeks, rumors circulated that someone may have orchestrated the shooting. Some witnesses suggested the suspects had been seen with another individual days before the attack. Others mentioned hearing conversations that hinted at a larger plan. None of these statements were verified at the time. Detectives documented these allegations, but did not present them as proven facts. Investigators reviewed messages and social media activity linked to Johnson and Smith. Some exchanges indicated coordination. Certain messages pointed to movements on the day of the shooting. Others referenced needing to handle something. These messages remained open to interpretation. Detectives knew they could not rely on ambiguous statements alone. They needed direct ties supported by physical evidence. As detectives closed in on the suspects, news of the investigation spread across the city. Community members followed every development. Fans of Young Dolph expressed grief and frustration. The bakery where the shooting occurred continued to receive visitors, many bringing flowers, candles, and written messages. The block became a memorial site. Officers maintained a presence to ensure safety and to answer questions from the public. While the memorial grew, detectives followed leads regarding Johnson's whereabouts. They learned he had ties in multiple states, including areas outside Tennessee. Officers in other jurisdictions were notified. The United States Marshals Service became involved. They traced his movements across several locations. On January 11, 2022, after weeks of searching, Johnson was located and taken into custody. The arrest was a critical moment for the investigation. Detectives interviewed Johnson after his capture. He declined to provide details about the shooting. He stated that he wanted legal representation. Detectives ended the interview. They knew they would gather more information through evidence and testimony rather than direct confession. Cornelius Smith was located shortly afterward. He was arrested and transported to Memphis. Detectives interviewed him under similar conditions. Smith denied involvement. He said he did not participate in the shooting. He said he had been misidentified. Detectives noted his statements and continued building the case through evidence. With both suspects in custody, detectives turned to the next question. Was there someone else behind the attack? Community members and online conversations pointed to a man named Hernandez Govan. Rumors suggested he had connections to individuals involved in the shooting. Some alleged he ordered the attack. These claims remained unverified. Detectives approached this part of the investigation with caution. To determine whether Govan had a role in organizing the attack, investigators examined phone records, messages, and interactions between him and the suspects. They identified conversations that placed him in contact with individuals linked to the case. Some messages, according to investigators, referenced movements and planning. Still, detectives needed more than implication. They needed clear evidence. As investigators continued their work, prosecutors reviewed the information. Based on their assessment, a decision was made to charge Govan with planning the attack. He was arrested and charged with conspiracy. Prosecutors emphasized that these charges were based on evidence gathered during the investigation. They also emphasized that Govan would have the opportunity to challenge the allegations in court. With three individuals facing charges, detectives shifted focus to strengthening the case. They revisited the timeline. They verified the data collected from the vehicle, the footage, the digital records, and the witness statements. They ensured each piece of evidence was properly documented for trial. They narrowed the details down to what would be admissible. This process required weeks of careful review. As the legal process unfolded, each suspect's involvement became clearer. Evidence presented by prosecutors painted a picture of coordination between Johnson and Smith. The fingerprint match, the vehicle link, and the movement patterns placed them at the center of the attack. Allegations that Govan planned the attack became a major part of the case, though they remained allegations until tested in court. The trial process extended through 2023 and 2024. Witnesses testified. Experts presented findings from ballistics, forensics, and digital analysis. Prosecutors outlined their theory. Defense attorneys challenged the evidence. They questioned the reliability of witness accounts. They questioned the interpretation of digital data. They questioned the chain of custody for evidence found inside the stolen Mercedes. Despite these challenges, the case against Johnson progressed. In 2024, he was convicted of first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and being a felon in possession of a firearm. This conviction was based on proven evidence, including the fingerprint, the vehicle link, the timeline, and the surveillance analysis. The verdict brought a measure of closure, though the loss remained heavy for the victim's family and the community. As for Smith, the legal process continued. He faced multiple charges, and the court would determine the outcome based on evidence presented. During one phase of the trial, Smith testified that another individual was involved in planning the attack. This statement became a central point of contention. Prosecutors examined the claim. Defense teams challenged it. Detectives reviewed the statement alongside earlier allegations regarding Govan. In 2025, after a lengthy legal process, a jury acquitted Hernandez Govan of organizing the attack. Prosecutors stated that while the allegations had formed part of the investigation, the evidence presented did not meet the standard required for conviction. The acquittal highlighted the difference between allegation and proof. It showed that some questions would remain unanswered. Through all these developments, the community continued to grieve. Fans held events in memory of young Dolph. Artists paid tribute in concerts and recordings. Community leaders spoke about the need to address violence and create opportunities for young people. The bakery where the shooting occurred remained a point of reflection. People came from across the country to honor the life and legacy of the man lost. The aftermath extended beyond the legal process. Young Dolph had built a career based on independence, resilience, and connection to Memphis. His death left a void felt in neighborhoods across the city. Families, friends, and fans continued to share stories about how his music inspired them. Community programs in his name grew in number. His memory became part of Memphis's story. Detectives who worked the case reflected on the investigation. It was a complex, high-pressure case involving public scrutiny, national attention, and layers of rumor. They relied on evidence to cut through speculation. They relied on lab work, footage, witness accounts, and digital analysis. The break came from the combination of these pieces. It came from the persistent work of teams across the department. It came from the cooperation of community members who provided recordings and tips. The case officially closed with the conviction of one suspect, the ongoing legal process for another, and the acquittal of the individual accused of organizing the attack. The answers were not complete. Some parts of the story remained unclear. Some questions would never be fully resolved. But the core facts were established. The daylight killing of young Dolph was carried out by individuals who coordinated their movements, used a stolen vehicle, and fled through neighborhoods known to them. For the city of Memphis, the aftermath brought reflection. People asked what the loss meant for the future of local artists, local businesses, and the community as a whole. They spoke about the importance of safety and the need to address roots of violence. They honored young Dolph's work in helping neighborhoods, supporting families, and investing in youth. In the end, the investigation revealed the path taken by the suspects, the evidence that identified them, and the legal outcomes that followed. It also revealed the depth of grief felt across Memphis. The loss was not only personal, but cultural. It changed the atmosphere of the city and left a lasting imprint on those who knew him and those who knew of him. For detectives, the case concluded with a clear understanding of what took place on that November afternoon. For Memphis, the impact would remain for years. The bakery on Airways Boulevard continued to carry the weight of that day, standing as a reminder of the moments that changed everything.